This is Agile Under Waterfall, and I'm Benjamin Day, owner of Benjamin Day Consulting. Based out of Cambridge, Massachusetts, I do a lot of stuff with Team Foundation Server, a lot of stuff with Scrum. Lately, I've been teaching KPMG, tons of people there, how to do Scrum. So it's been kind of a fun time for them. I teach two different classes, Professional Scrum Developer, which is the TFS course plus Scrum from Scrum.org, and then Professional Scrum Foundations. I also do a lot of stuff with software architecture and testing practices and all that kind of fun stuff. Anything else? Benday.com, Benday at Benday.com is my email address, and then I have my Twitter account that I don't use that often, but feel free to heckle me virtually throughout my session. Now, keep in mind that it is a public forum. So this happened to me a number of talks ago. I usually say, feel free to heckle me virtually over Twitter. And at the end of one of my sessions, this guy came up to me and he's like, hey man, just wait until you see what I wrote about you. It's gonna be awesome. And I went and looked, and this guy wrote some horrific stuff. And you're like, you're never gonna get a job ever again if any employer ever sees what you wrote on Twitter. That is just horrifying. Anyway, moving on. So I have some introductory thoughts. First off, what do we mean by waterfall? I'm going to use waterfall as a shortcut for plan-driven. So I'm thinking Gantt charts, Microsoft Project, start dates, end dates, phased delivery of stuff. And then I'm going to talk about, well, the title is Agile Under Waterfall, but I'm going to use Scrum Under Waterfall because I feel like it falls off my tongue better. So Scrum Under a Waterfall, I'm going to abbreviate as SUW. And I'm thinking of that as a combination of Scrum plus plan-driven or Agile plus plan-driven. All right? Another assumption is that Scrum Under a Waterfall actually exists. Does anyone disagree that Scrum Under a Waterfall might exist? Awesome. I just double-negative myself in my head. I'm like, wait a minute, what did I just ask? No one raised their hand. Does that mean that no one agrees with me, or does everyone agree with me? Ugh, too early. All right. Next assumption is that the value of Agile and Scrum is settled. Now, I do a lot of Scrum training, helping lots of different companies roll this stuff out. And, I mean, Agile and Scrum are not new, but I'm amazed at how much pushback I still get from orgs as they're thinking about adopting Scrum or Agile. So, just to make the talk go a little bit more smoothly, I'm going to assume that we all agree that Agile is a good thing. All right? One thing is it's pretty popular. So, Forrester Research released Water Scrum Fall is the Reality of Agile for Most Organizations Today. And they're finding that 38.6% of companies are using Agile. Now, the next one down on that is do not use a formal process methodology, and that's 28.8%. Anyone want to say that your company does not use a formal methodology? Raise your hand if you're embarrassed to raise your hand about the previous question. All right. That's fair. Because you guys are terrible. I don't know how you manage to look yourself in the mirror after you get out of bed in the morning. That's unbelievable. But actually, that's really quite true. And I find that for a lot of the companies that push back against this, they're like, yeah, we don't want to use Scrum. Why? Oh, it's too heavy. What? It's like, what do you use now? Nothing. Well, I guess that is pretty lightweight. and if you're in an Agile organization, chances are extremely high that you're using Scrum. There's a whole bunch of other different flavors, but Scrum, far and away, is a leader. And it's not surprising, considering that if you look at the Chaos Manifesto from 2011, you get an awful lot better result off of, I almost said off of Waterfall, off of Agile than off of Waterfall. So, especially as it relates to failed projects. So just because we're using some sort of an agile methodology doesn't mean that everything's awesome, but
at least we're not like failing outright. All right? It's no fun to work on a field project. Thankfully, I don't think I've worked on one for a really long time. And I'm going to say that it wasn't my fault. So there, moving on. My 2 cents on Scrum Under a Waterfall, and I guess there's going to be an awful lot of 2 cents. I have 75 minutes of 2 cents on Scrum Under a Waterfall coming up, so buckle your seatbelts, kids. It's a really difficult place to be. It's just uncomfortable. You've got two different competing methodologies that don't really get along all that well, and there's overhead attached to it. And one of the ways that I'm trying to encourage my customers to think about this is if you have to do this, it's a transitional form. It's going to take some time to become full agile. It's going to take some time to sort of wean people off of waterfall as their mindset. Because waterfall feels good. It just makes perfect sense for human beings for some reason. So saying that it's a difficult place to be, I would like to introduce a quote from a famous project management expert. Paraphrased, you can drive with your feet, doesn't mean it's a good idea. All right? So when I talk to customers and they're saying, yeah, well, we kind of like it this way. It's like we have to do budgets and we have to do this thing and that thing and the other thing. It's like, and we have fixed dates and fixed deliverables on features and it's where you have to be. Great. Well, doesn't mean you're going to have awesome results with that. So moving on. If you work for a company that does Scrum Under a Waterfall, what do you do? Option number one, quit and protest, get a new job. Not a terrible solution. I'm guessing that you know, those of you in the audience right now probably have some pretty marketable skills. There are enough companies out there that are doing Agile or doing Scrum, and it's like, wow, I don't need this noise. I'm moving on. But let's say that you actually want to, you want to accept the challenge. So you're going to try to make it work. And a lot of times, well, not a lot of times, almost always, someone is paying you to do this stuff. It's their money. You dance the way they want you to dance. And if they want you to dance Scrum Under a Waterfall and it's awkward, all right, that's the way you have to go. Doesn't mean you have to like it, and it doesn't mean that it has to stay that way. So when I open my Scrum classes, I usually say, first off, it doesn't have to be this way. I know you have dysfunction right now. I know there are people that are saying that you can't do Agile, you can't do Waterfall, but it doesn't have to be this way. And part of this is that you have to have conversations. Help the people in leadership make informed decisions. And maybe lead the transition yourself. How many of you are CTOs? CIOs, next level below that, whatever you call it at your org. Basic engineers. Okay, testers? You've got a massive mix. This is like 10% of each bucket. All right, my goal is to be practical here. I am a pretty practical guy. I'm not super dogmatic, and I recognize that well, you're not going to change your entire organization overnight. So I'm going to try to help you to see both sides of what's going on and get you into the mindset that you can accept where you are so you can also accept that the change is going to take a certain amount of time to get there. So let's think about some comparisons and motivations between the two methodologies. Waterfall versus Scrum. So waterfall, you're probably doing a lot of requirements. You're writing out full-on requirements documents. You're delivering them at the end of the requirements gathering phase to someone that's going to do a design. That then goes into an implementation phase, goes into a testing phase probably, and then you have some sort of acceptance testing phase and then deployment. Well, thinking about what requirements look like in Scrum and Agile, one of the things we're trying to do is we're trying to be lightweight. Just enough requirements so that you can actually execute successfully on what you're trying to do. A lot less work writing requirements. Waterfall kind of assumes that here's the mission I would like you to do as a development team. Don't talk to me until it's done. So not as much customer involvement. A lot of times they're like, yeah, whatever. I'm paying you. Don't talk to me. I wrote those big requirements documents, signed off on them, just deliver that. In Scrum, if you're not talking to your stakeholders fairly often, if you're not talking to your customer fairly often, you're going to have an awfully hard time being successful. Largely because, well, you don't have those really tight requirements. You've got a list of product backlog items, user stories, whatever you call them, and those are usually thought of as a reminder to have a conversation about what that thing means. Another one in Waterfall is a start to finish or nearly start to finish project plan that has dates on it. In Scrum, product backlog, you've got a plan for the sprint. Beyond that, stuff is pretty sketchy because you're doing that pretty much just in time on a per sprint basis. You've got an idea of what, you've got a projection in your backlog of, you know, where we're trying to go, but sprint to sprint, you only know what you're doing in 30 days or less. And as motivations shift and priorities shift, you change entirely. So sprint over sprint, your direction could go change 180 degrees. In Waterfall, you're thinking, okay, here's the direction we're going for the entire project, and there you go. Finish it up in 8 months or less, or whatever the duration is. Another one in Waterfall is that tasks are assigned. Usually you tend to have someone's name attached to a task. Scrum thinks that that's sort of a bad idea. It's tough to self-organize if you have planned out exactly who's going to do everything inside of the sprint and you've assigned tasks to them. It's considered a worse practice. Waterfall also has a potentially large team size. Scrum is thinking 3 to 9 people. And the idea for Scrum having a smaller team size is that there's communication overhead. There's only so many people you can talk to at a given time. And with Waterfall, you have a larger team, but your communication, your coordination happens through that project plan, so you're pretty much okay there. Multiple phases that eventually deliver stuff. Scrum and Agile, you're delivering at the end of each sprint. So working software is delivered to you in 30 days or less. One of the big ones is that Waterfall is somewhat resistant to change. One, if you have changes in plan, it's considered a bug. And then two, if you have a change to plan, it's got a major ripple effect on that large project plan that you've got that is end to end, and it makes people uncomfortable to see that happen. In Scrum and Agile, we're acknowledging the fact that we don't know exactly what we're doing, and that as we discover new stuff based on empiricism, we're going to inspect and adapt and do the right thing when we know it, as opposed to just blindly following a plan. Waterfall, you usually have a contract that says this is what you're going to deliver. Someone has signed off on a contract, signed off on the requirements, and in Scrum and Agile, that contract's going to look a lot more like a time and a T&E agreement. Is there a question? Time and expenses. Now, that doesn't say that it's not really super comfortable. Like, I did a waterfall-ish project for a major financial institution about 6 or 7 years ago, and the customer didn't want to be involved. I had a whole bunch of stuff that it's like, hey, can you look at this and tell me do you like it or not? They're like, I'm too busy. They never responded. But when I wrote up the contract, I put screenshots into the contract, and they signed off on it. So at the end of that development project, when we delivered exactly the wrong piece of software on time and on budget, and they didn't like it, they're like, hey, I hate this. I'm like, I kept giving you drops, and you didn't look at it. It's like, yeah, but we hate it. And then I was like, here is the requirements document. This is exactly, is this your signature? Yes, it is. And they're like, well, it's going to cost you more to change all the stuff because you signed off on it. You told me what to build. They were super angry. It ended up doubling the cost of the project, which was more work for me and the team, which was, you know, good. But at the end, I had a really angry customer that I've never worked for again. Ugh. So, yeah, Scrum versus Waterfall. There you go. Why Waterfall? First off, is it really feels good It's like, oh my God, we've got a plan. We know what we're going to do. It's written down. Look at this. We're so organized. High five us. Yes. Helps managers manage, which is good because it justifies their existence. And it gives you the feeling like, yes, we have pinned down the uncertainty of what we're going to do. We know exactly what we're going to do, and we deliver on it. Awesome. Comes naturally, feels good. So why Scrum and Agile? Now, you may have detected that I have a bit of an opinion about this. It embraces the uncertainty. I don't know. We're all from a software background here. Software doesn't get less complex once we start. It usually becomes more complex. We start off understanding a business problem in one way, and then it is rare that once the developers actually start digging in or the analysts start digging into what these things actually mean and what it's going to take and what we have to integrate with and what our front ends look like and our database problems and it's really rare that we find that it's gotten more easy to do. Usually, we get in there and we find out that the requirements are actually fractally complex, and that the more we drill into them, the more complicated they become, or the complexity stays the same the deeper we drill in. So that gives an awful lot of uncertainty as far as when we're going to be delivering stuff, and you know those dates now are out the window on Waterfall almost right away. How many of you work on Scrum teams right now? How many of you say the team is going to commit to deliver X, Y, and Z at the end of the sprint? Awesome. Here's a tip for you. This will make your team's interaction with your stakeholders and with your bosses so much more credible. Stop saying commit, start saying forecast. It's a little tiny trick. Linguistic frames make all the difference. They're not going to notice you're not saying commit. They're going to hear you saying forecast, and they're going to feel, yeah, all right, I get that. You don't have on TV weather committers. You have weather forecasters. You don't go like just think about what it's like. Like if you say commit to your bosses and then your team doesn't deliver on your commitment, they come to you and say that you lack commitment, that you're lazy, that you're incompetent, whatever. And if the weatherman says it's going to snow 4 feet tomorrow, and then the next day comes by and it has not done anything of the kind, do you go up to that person's house and be like, where's your commitment, dude? No. You say forecast because the human mind understands that there's uncertainty in the forecast. It gives you an environment to discuss scope. It's good. Start saying forecast instead of commit. Another thing with Scrum and Agile is that the team is self-organizing, and the estimates are coming from the people that are actually going to do the work, as opposed to from the top down. All right? So a good question to ask yourself is, who is Waterfall actually for? And the way that I like to think of this is, have you ever seen a company that is Agile at the top and Waterfall at the bottom? No. So who's that mean that this is probably for? It's probably for the leadership. They want to feel good about you making commitments to certain dates and certain features and certain delivery cadences, and they want to be done, okay? Now, one of the things that as you're rolling out an Agile process or even Team Foundation Server, really, is as you start to record what is going on your teams, executives sometimes get really touchy because when you have those retrospectives at the end of your sprints or your iterations or whatever you're calling them, a lot of times you're going to say, hey, well, we really needed feedback from our product owner and that person was completely MIA and, well, you're asking us to do this and you threw us 18 curveballs and you didn't really participate and all this kind of stuff. And now inside of the software development process is a little bit of finger pointing that says, hey, we're not all idiots here on the development team. You didn't really help us out. You're part of the problem. You need to participate. So in that waterfall thing, it's like, here's the plan. Go do it. I'm awesome. Peace out. And then it's left to the IT teams to go deliver this stuff, and then you miss and whatever because life's complicated. So Another question is, inside of your organization, do your managers trust the team? And what does the team think about the managers? I'm probably betting that there's not a whole lot of credibility and trust going in either direction. That's part of your problem. So why do waterfall people think that agilists are nuts? Generally think that we're all a bunch of sandal-wearing hippies. I'm wearing a suit jacket. I am not a sandal-wearing hippie, but you know, whatever. It's just part of the stereotype. They also think that our estimates are always wrong. That's good, because they are. They think that we're always late. Yeah, we are, if you assume that the scope is fixed. They assume, therefore, that we're lazy and that their plan was awesome, and if we'd just been good enough to execute on their awesome plan, everything would have been wonderful, and it would be great if we didn't have incompetent developers, because they're just writing bug after bug after bug. And we need to do waterfall because this stuff is way too complex to not have a plan. Sound familiar? Now let's flip it around and think of it agile towards the waterfall team. One thing we don't like is that the plan is largely voluntold. Does anyone know what is? Anyone? It's a sort of a military term. How many of you know what voluntold is? All right. So for the rest of you, I got this one from a friend who spent 9 years in the Navy. And when he told me this, I laughed endlessly. I'm like, that's the best word I've ever heard in my life. So he was in the Navy sometime right around when Iraq II was kicking off. And so his commanding officer came down and was like, we need a bunch of people that are going to go on the ground in Iraq. And he and his fellow sailors are thinking, we're in the Navy, we ride on boats, this is what we do, I'm not going over there on the ground. That's not my job. And no one volunteered. And the way that they were sort of reminded is like, okay, well, if we don't get 3 volunteers, which is what I need, I will volunteer for you. That is being called voluntold. It's like, oh, thank you very much for volunteering. You, and you, come with me, you're going to Iraq. All right. So the way this usually works out is someone, maybe if you're lucky, comes to you and says, hey, we need feature A, B, and C done. How long do you think that's going to take? And you're like, 6.5 months? You got 2. Awesome. And you just go with it. You knew it was bogus. You knew it was absolutely BS right from the beginning, but you just went for it. And that 6-month number you picked out of the sky was garbage too. So 2 months versus 6 months is like, you know you're going to be wrong, so whatever. And one of the problems is he didn't really have anything to estimate in the first place. You're just kind of pulling that number out of the sky. And what you're thinking is like, wow, this is way too complex to have a plan. When we get into this, everything shifts. This plan is garbage. Why bother working on the project? Not the project. I mean, why bother working on that project plan? So point of agreement number 1, each side thinks that the other is wrong. Awesome. Point of agreement number 2, the work is complex. Now this is the interesting little bit where we start to come together. Waterfall people are looking at this complexity and their motivation is, hold on tight. Let's plan this stuff out. On the agile side, the teams are looking at this and say, this is really complex. I don't want to make a whole lot of commitments and promises to you that I know are bogus. My credibility is important to me. I want to make sure that we have trust. I want to make sure we have honesty and transparency. If I lie to you and accept your voluntold estimate, it doesn't make it more right. If you're voluntold and you say, okay, yeah, 2 months instead of 6 months, it's not right. And your bosses now go off and do their little world saying, hey, awesome, I just shaved 4 months off the project. And they're going to execute on that knowledge. They're now executing on false data. Is that going to pay off for them? Answer?
No.
Awesome. You are the smartest kids in class. So how do you make it work? And like I said, Scrum under waterfall is a difficult place to be. It's the grumpy marriage of two different processes. So I don't know about you, but anyone have like grandparents that they just friggin' hated each other? They were married for like 65 years and like, I cannot wait until you drop dead. That's kind of what this is like. So two different things that just really think about the universe in two separate ways, and yet they're unified by a common purpose, which is software, which was not what my grandparents were unified by. So it's a grumpy marriage. It's tough. You're going to have to work at this thing. Why do orgs use Scrum under Waterfall? One of them is it's required by contract or it's required by law. So I did some work with the Department of Transportation and the FAA. It's written into the contract that it's got to be run with Waterfall. So in this particular conversation that I had, this manager who's working on a piece of software for the FAA was like, I have to do this with Waterfall by law, but I know that this is not going to work out. That was the beginning of this talk. That was the beginning of the inspiration. It's like, okay, well, if that's the case, how do you actually make that stuff work? Another reason why your company might be doing Scrum under Waterfall is that you're the agile experiment inside your org. But they don't want you to just sort of run around flinging poop at the walls. They want metrics. They want to see how this works, and they want to be able to compare oranges to oranges and not apples to whatever. Other times, it's just because. Maybe you've got some crazy dictator that's at the top of your organization, and he just likes it that way. I don't want you to say forecast. I want you to say commitment. And if you don't, you're fired. Great. That's a really good way to build trust. So the way to begin to make this work is you need to leverage the strengths of both. And as much as it just makes my heart hurt to say this, there are some things that Waterfall does well. One of the big ones is multi-team coordination and big release planning. Trying to coordinate a bunch of Scrum teams to all, like if you've got 10 Scrum teams and you're trying to make them come together, it's not impossible, but it's a little difficult because now you've got an awful lot of, like, do you know the traveling salesman problem? There's just a lot of different nodes that have to all talk to one another, and it's a little challenging to get that done. Sometimes it's helpful to have that big project plan that's just sort of, you can visualize how all this stuff rolls up. Now, the strengths of Scrum are huge. I love it. I think it's great. And one of the reasons why is that you're very honest with yourself about where you're actually at. And you also are going to try to not blindly follow a plan just because you have a plan. So in the case of this conversation I had with the FAA, the FAA software guy, is I recommended, okay, well, if you have to use Waterfall, try to put sprints over the top of it. So one of the big things about sprints, so sprints are the 30-day or less time window in which you develop fully done pieces of software. One of the things that's great about that is at the end of that 30 days, if you don't have working software, you're going to notice it. So you come up for air, you pause for a moment, and you're like, oh, yeah, we didn't do so hot this sprint. Why? Oh, we overcommitted. We did this. There was this other problem. Da 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 da. We should fix these things. So rather than just sort of starting here and going for 6 months and then finding out at the very last second that things are not okay, you are finding out in 30-day or less increments, in 30-day or less windows, whether or not you're on target. So in the case of the FAA, it's like they're using their Waterfall plan as their product backlog, but they're attacking it in 30-day chunks. So at the end of 30 days, if they haven't gotten the stuff done that they expected that they would have done, they notice it. They also are making themselves deliver pieces of working software. Now, it doesn't have to be deployed, but at least meet some definition of working. And they, if it doesn't, they've caught that right away. So they're not fooling themselves into thinking that they're further along than they actually are. So for Scrum and Agile, this is what's going to stay the same and what's going to change. So what's going to stay the same is you should have a definition of done. How many of you have a written definition of done on your teams? OK. The rest of you need to get one. It's about as close to a silver bullet as you are ever going to get in software development. So definition of done is the written definition of everything it takes to make a feature complete or a product backlog item complete. And it's not just code it, check it in, and compile it. It's check it in, coded, built as part of an automated build, has deployment scripts, code reviewed by someone other than the person who wrote it. It's been QA'd. There's a test plan. It has absolutely every last thing that it would take to go from inception to deployment. That's in your definition of done. There is an awful lot more to developing software than just code it and check it in. Now, my background is software development. I get that. Like, you think it is done when you check it in. But how often have you had the works on my box problem? Right? The only machine it works on is yours. Well, maybe it should be tested on someone else's box, and that's part of your definition of done. There's other stuff. There's QA that's involved. There's business analysts that are involved. There's maybe sign off by stakeholders, like all kinds of stuff like that. So if you have that written definition of done, and somebody comes to you and tries to voluntold an estimate at you, you can say, rather than, no, I don't think it's going to be that short, I think there's a lot more complexity to it, rather than just ending the conversation there, you're going to pull out this scroll that has your definition of done on it and says, yeah, well, maybe it's going to take 2 months to do the development portion, but based on our experience, it takes an awful lot more to get this stuff into production. Here's why. Here's what the items are. We need to take these into account in our estimates. So, in Scrum under a waterfall, you still have to have that focus on definition of done. At the end of your sprint, it has to meet the definition of done or it doesn't count. You're still going to have your daily Scrum. Daily Scrum is your 24-hour opportunity to inspect and adapt, see how you're doing. Create a plan for the next 24 hours. You probably will keep the sprint burndown chart to see whether or not you're on target for delivering at the end of that sprint. Sprint review is the same. Retrospective is the same. What's changed is your product backlog is a lot more like that project plan. And in fact, it probably is that project plan. So what that means is you're going to have a lot less emphasis on backlog grooming, and your sprint planning meetings are going to be a little less collaborative. But you're still going to try to do this stuff, because we've figured out in the Agile and Scrum world over the last, let's say, 20 years now-ish, that this stuff works. Keeping us honest is a really good thing because, well, we're human and we are super awesome at lying to ourselves. Anyone not awesome at lying to yourself? I think everybody here can trick yourself into thinking that you are a lot better off than you are or that you're doing stuff well. Yes. Where does requirements gathering fit? I'm assuming that that has taken place before the development team has gotten to this. So this is.
So you assume requirement is all there.
It's still a waterfall, right? Okay. So that still is one of the deliverables that would potentially happen. Someone's gathered that. They've signed off on it. It's probably gone into a contract somewhere. Yes, commitment. Once again, that word comes up. All right. So risks in Scrum under a waterfall. There's an impedance mismatch that leads to poor communication. So any of you know what the object relational impedance mismatch is? So basically, in that case, there's a mismatch between how relational databases think and how object-oriented systems think. And there's a lot of work making the two talk. That's called an impedance mismatch. It just doesn't bangs against each other. Now, when I went through that chart of one side is here's what waterfall thinks, here's what Scrum thinks, that's kind of describing that Scrum waterfall impedance mismatch. And if you're not aware of the fact that the values on either side of that chart are different, you're going to have some real problems with communication. So you have to address things head on. So I love this particular Dilbert cartoon. So let's take 20 seconds to read that. Yeah, it's about right. The number of times that you on your team know exactly where you're at and you're eating it every single day, absolutely dying, you know this is never going to work, and then your boss comes in and he's like, doing great, 82% done, woohoo! And you're not, which leads to a major lack of trust and transparency. So if basically in Scrum Under a Waterfall, and this is rampant even in Scrum Under Scrum companies, like full on Agile, there is a lot of lying. Teams are liars. Oh my God. We got to be honest. And one of the reasons why we're not honest, though, is culture of fear. So in a lot of organizations, they're even if they're trying to go Agile, trying to go Scrum, there's still a command and control mindset that's there. And it sets up this thing where everyone's afraid of everybody. Well, I'll talk more about that later on. But basically, what's going on is that the developers all think that they're going to get fired at the drop of a hat if they say no at any point in time. And they think they'll never get another job again. So therefore, they do whatever it quote unquote, whatever it takes to get the job done. And that's not really in anyone's best interest. And I'll talk about why later on. And if you're always lying, that means that you're completely detached from reality. You've got this whole set of books that says we are kicking ass and taking names. And in reality, the team knows we are dying. We're about 20 feet underwater, and we are not coming up for air anytime soon. Better start polishing up my resume. And what I think is, from every waterfall project I've ever worked on or seen, everything is going great until it isn't. Does this sound familiar? Especially if you're doing earned value. So earned value is, you know, like basically the idea of like, oh, we're 85% done. Like that first 85% of any task takes about 20% of the time, and the remaining 15% takes like 130% of the time. And what ends up happening is that if you're using earned value and you're saying, oh, we're 85% complete, we're doing great, what ends up happening is that you execute in your project plan. Let's say you're on a waterfall project that's 6 months long. For the first 5.5 months, everything's going great. You're on time. We're going to bring it in right on the nose, maybe even a little bit early because we are 85% done. And then you make it to 5.5 weeks, and then somebody happens to look at where you're actually at, and you're like, oh, you mean that? Yeah, we're about 6 months late at least. Because it never just goes a little bit late. It always goes from perfectly on time to astoundingly not on time. And that's because we're lying. Partly because of the fear and the voluntoldism. But it's not great because you're basically running two sets of books. There's what you know, and then there's what everyone else knows. And if you're doing Scrum Under a Waterfall, if your product backlog and your, you know, all the results from your sprint and the retrospectives and all this kind of stuff is showing that you are not doing well, but you're not pushing that back to the people that are thinking in waterfall land and waterfall mode, you're running two sets of books. And now it's bad. Another one that can potentially happen is that, well, Scrum being an empirical process tends to capture a fair number of metrics. One of them is the burndown chart, which you can use for evil quite effectively. So thinking of the culture of fear, this is an important one to think about. So we've got that black line that goes from the northwest corner to the southeast corner. That's your ideal trend line. So if everything is sticking right to that line, you are doing great. If you're below that line, you're ahead of schedule. Now, if you're above that line, you are not ahead of schedule. You're above the ideal trend. So in an organization that has nice metrics like this laid around, this is sort of like a loaded handgun in a daycare center. I can't believe I just said that. Wow, I have to stop free associating on stage. Anyway, oh, I'm laughing at my own jokes. This is sad. So let's say that you're above that ideal trend line. And one of your waterfall-y bosses comes and looks at that, and you're like, oh, man, you're late. What's going on? And they start flipping out. And let's say they do this for a handful of weeks or maybe a little longer. What are you going to tend to do as a development team or as a team if you know that your boss is going to flip out if this thing is not going down by exactly 8 hours per person per day? One, take down the chart, which is now not good. The other one is that you're going to make it go down at exactly 8 hours per day per person. And at that point, you might as well take down the chart because now the chart doesn't mean anything. Once again, you're doing two sets of books. So that's one of the things you're going to have to worry about in a Scrum under waterfall organization. Another one, I'm seeing this constantly and I cannot believe it. Scrum tends to think of teams succeeding or failing as a unit. And waterfall organizations tend to think of people as resources, and you want to know if you're in how the performance of your individual resources is. So you're obsessed with individual performance. That's not really what Scrum is thinking about, and there's a whole lot of different things related to planning and estimation that can really cause you some trouble with that. You have to be worried about waterfall side of the house being really obsessed with individual performance. Another one is the show it to me when it's done problem. So if you've got a 6-month waterfall project plan, you're like, well, we've got the project plan, so why do you have to talk to me? I got stuff to do, like surf Facebook or, you know, shop for cat clothing on Amazon.com and Etsy. And at that point, leadership and the stakeholders check out, and you're like, deliver it at the end. And what happens at the end is exactly what happened with that project that I did for that major financial institution, which was deliver exactly the wrong piece of software. And in my case, I delivered it, because I'm awesome, on time and on budget, but it was exactly the wrong piece of software. More likely, and it was just purely like, you know, like winning the lottery that I delivered it on time, but what's more likely to happen is you're going to deliver the exactly wrong piece of software over budget and late, which is even worse. If you can manage to grab your stakeholders and your leadership, you know, by the collar and drag them in to look at your stuff at the end of the sprint reviews or during your sprint reviews, they're now going to be involved in this stuff so that they're not going to be surprised at the end. And this is one of the upsides of Scrum delivering real value, real done functionality at the end of every sprint as opposed to at the end of a big project plan. Frequent opportunities for inspection. So, now that I've talked about all these things that are not working out so well, what do we do about it? And I have 5 tips. Number one is to think positive. What's that? You're positive it won't work. Yes, you may be right. People start getting really weird when their org starts thinking about becoming more agile. And this happens even in development teams. Like, there's lots of developers that I run into that they're not super crazy about going away from waterfall either. And one of the main reasons is that it's going to require them to think. It's really nice in waterfall that you've got these pre-assigned tasks and you just show up and you write code or you test stuff and you just wiggle your fingers on the keyboard for 8 hours and go home. Unfortunately, Scrum and agile processes require you to actually think and participate. So, another major problem is the human being's fear of loss. This is a well-documented effect that even though the potential for gaining something is super high, we will obsess on the fact that we are losing something. So, in the case of, well, we're going to go for more of an agile methodology rather than, you know, and less waterfall, you're losing, you know, the certainty. You're losing the fact that we've got these dates, and you're losing the fact that you're committing to delivering this stuff on time, and they're going to just, people tend to see that as loss and they freak out. They also see as a loss the fact that they now have to think and their job is now a little harder and more involved. What they're losing is anonymity. Does anyone have people on your team that you know for a fact that they just are like, they do the minimum and they stay out of the way and keep their head down and no one asks them to do anything and they like it that way? I think in Scrum and an Agile process, those people are going to have a tough time. Because the team is going to be held to account as a unit, and if you've got people on the team that you're hauling around your back, sprint over sprint over sprint, people are going to get grumpy about that. In Waterfall, as long as you're delivering your tasks on time and it's meeting that minimal expectations of what's in that project plan, you're in a lot better shape and you can be more anonymous. So that fear of loss is major. Fear is huge. So what you should do is you should try to, as you're pushing your organizations to go more agile, to think more about what you gain as opposed to what you lose. So what we are going to gain is done software. And we're going to get it a lot more often. At the end of every sprint, we're going to have something that approximates done, if not literally done. Okay? So that's one thing that you get. Another thing that you're going to get is, well, I don't have a slide about it, but I'll just talk about it anyway, is that as you're delivering at the end of every sprint, what you're going to get is an opportunity to change. So if you're delivering done software, and then you manage to get your leadership to actually look at it and give their opinion, they now have their ability to change the priority of what's going on. So one of the things you're going to do is you're going to have to hold their hand to get them past the fact that changing the plan is a feature, not a bug. It's a big deal in Waterfall. If the plan starts to change, it doesn't match the baseline, that's an indication that something went wrong. Oh my God, we didn't plan properly. Or the team stinks. Or whatever. Our requirements are not that good. All kinds of reasons that people freak out because the plan is changing. They don't generally freak out because, oh, well, as soon as we start working on something, it's always more complicated than we thought, and now we know more, and now we can give you a better estimate. We're like, no, we're freaking out because we're losing control over our project plan. So if you can get your organization to, you know, loosen up a little bit, say, okay, the change is going to happen. We're going to deliver better software because we're going to let ourselves adapt and change. You're going to get something positive. You're going to get better software. So at the end of those sprints, when you deliver something and they don't like it, rather than saying you don't like it, say, okay, well, this is our chance to adapt. So now you are gaining something as opposed to losing the fact that, oh, this wasn't what I wanted. So another linguistic thing to do with your teams, sort of in the same way of like forecast versus commit, is to try to banish the word rework. So a lot of teams tend to freak out that at the end of a sprint or even mid-sprint that they'll deliver something that is not exactly what their stakeholders wanted. Now, the problem is that we can't read our stakeholders' minds. Even if we have amazing requirements, by the time you actually execute on it, it doesn't look the same, doesn't come out the same. And we've all seen that cartoon of the tire swing, like what the customer asked for, what they actually got, what the developer thought, and all that stuff, and like completely different variations and interpretations of what a rope tire swing looks like hanging from a tree. If no one knows what I'm talking about, I'm going to move on. It's like, good analogy that no one knew. Awesome. You stink as a speaker, Ben. So you have to try to get away from rework. You have to start trying to train people that it's an opportunity to adapt and to improve the software, and that change is just something you're going to do. And when you change that, you're improving an existing feature to better meet the stakeholders' needs, as opposed to just swing and a miss. Totally different frames. You're going to use those sprint boundaries as a way to take stock of where you're at. So if you're focusing on done software, that means that at the end of 30 days or less, if you have not delivered something that meets your definition of done, you know about it very, very well. And at the end of that sprint, if you are trying to be more agile and you're accepting the fact that that plan can and should change, well, now you can adapt to where you want to go. Which brings up a completely not especially related quote by Carl Philipp Gottfried von Clausewitz. He wrote this little book called On War. He's a Prussian general, been dead for an extremely long time, wrote an extremely influential book in military circles called On War. And he says, strategy is the use of the engagement for the purpose of the war. It's also commonly said, strategy is the use of the battle for the purposes of the war. Now, what he's going for here is he's trying to encourage his generals and other leadership in the Prussian army to start thinking that the battle is not the complete thing. You may have won this battle, but you might lose the war, right? We've kind of heard that idea. So taking that same idea and applying it to Scrum or a Scrum owner or a waterfall, and said at the end of that sprint boundary, you're going to stop and take a look at where you're at. And that's your opportunity to say, okay, how do we use what we've got to the advantage of meeting the overall goals of the war? So, strategy is the use of the engagement for the purpose of the war. You are once again gaining the opportunity to inspect where you're at so you can change and make sure that you're meeting the overall direction of what you're trying to do with the product. Very different from waterfall, which says, this is what our goal is, we're going to stay with that goal. And you never come up for air. Tip number two, you got to come to terms with uncertainty. So software is not a sure thing, and wishing does not make it so. Forecast versus commitment, right? We all know that, well, as software developers or as software delivery people, oh, there's a lot of times you're like, wow, I sure thought that was going to be easy, and that wasn't, right? So wishing that it were, you know, easier, like one of the things that comes up when I teach Scrum classes a lot is, well, how come Scrum isn't like, you wouldn't build a house without an idea. You wouldn't like build the roof first and then put the plumbing in and then the basement afterwards. And I'm like, yeah, true. But software is way more complex than building a house. I mean, how many moving parts do you have in a house? You got the windows, you got the doors, you got some like plumbing that's in there. How many other moving parts are there? Maybe heating system, not that much. Like I ticked off four, and the way that they all interact against each other is a known quantity. So you don't suddenly have your doors like swing against the ceilings on alternate Thursdays unless you have a certain credential and your social security number ends with 5. Oh, and it's a leap year. And oh, in which case that I don't want the sinks to turn on. I want them to turn off always, and the garbage disposal should be on 24 hours a day. You don't get that kind of requirement in building a house. In software, it happens all the time, right? You think you understand something, and then someone throws you a curveball and says, oh, yeah, well, depending on whether or not this is the case, it's not going to be a plane anymore. It's going to be a cute little kitty. And that cute little kitty has to tow a jet airplane behind it, and the batteries are going to start on fire. So software is not a sure thing, and wishing does not make it easier. Another thing is that gripping tighter does also not make it a sure thing. Now, this is what I think a lot of stuff, like with waterfall-centric organizations and waterfall-centric people, they tend to see the complexity and they're control freaky. I am control freaky. Like, there is a particular dysfunction in the Scrum world called hero dysfunction, and I've got it bad. So, and one of the things is that I've got control freak tendencies. So when I'm working with teams, I have to make sure that I am not gripping super tight and trying to command and control my Scrum teams. So gripping tighter does not help software to become any less complex. You need to work with these people and make them feel like it's okay to let go a little. Take a deep breath. Why are you so freaked out by this? What can we do to make you feel better about this? apart from giving you dates and commitments that are bogus. As I said before, software always gets more complex once you start. So you really have to accept that change is going to happen, and you have to evangelize that to the waterfall type people. Now, one of the ways that the waterfall people will tend to grip tighter is they're going to tend to think that, oh, well, we need to spend more time estimating and planning, and then our project plan will never be wrong ever again. How often is that the case?
Never.
Never the case. Like, what ends up happening is that you spend an awful lot more time doing estimation. It's like strategery. A lot more time doing estimation and planning, and you don't get a significantly better result. So that's a form of waste, right? So rather than spending all that time navel-gazing, trying to make sure that your plan is bulletproof, if you spent that time working on software, maybe you deliver an extra quarter of a feature. Okay? So that's another one of those things that you're going to gain. Gain versus loss. Spin that as we're going to spend less time on trying to create ultra-accurate estimates because we know that we can get to a pretty good estimate pretty fast. And we're going to spend the time instead on delivering working software. You're going to get to good enough, and then you're going to stop. This is another thing that's important with definition of done. So it's also important to discuss scope of what things mean. So as you're bouncing stuff in its transitional forms against the stakeholders and product owners, leadership, saying, hey, what do you think about this? When it's good enough, don't do anymore. Same thing on the requirements gathering. If the requirements are good enough to execute on, don't do more. But you have to have conversations with the people that are above you and let them know that you're kind of thinking about this and make them feel okay. Because, number three, fear is everywhere. Now, for those of you who are leaders, CIOs, CTOs, development managers, VP, whatever, project managers even, your developers are afraid of you. It's an unfortunate truth. Developers are terrified. Additionally, if you've got middle managers, they're afraid of you and they're afraid of the developers. Think about why that would actually be the case. They're stuck in the middle. If they were technical at one point, they probably are less technical now, and they don't have any control over what's going on because it's all up to the people that are actually doing the software. They're just kind of hanging out, managing, and sending messages up and down. They're caught in the middle. They're the person that's going to go to the executive team, and they're the ones that are going to get shot at. So they're afraid of you, and they're afraid of the developers telling them, hey, we're wicked late. And we're never going to make it. And have fun telling the VP that we all stink. I'm going to go to lunch. So one of the things to keep in mind about your developers, and potentially your middle managers if they are formerly developers, is that they were not the cool kids in school. How many of you were a cool kid in school? There is nobody that raised their hand. All right. How many of you were picked on when you were in? Yes, lots of us, almost everybody. So we were, in one form or the other, bullied throughout most of our entire lives, especially in the formative years. So what this has done is this has set up a mental thing that happens for us. One of the things that happens is we get amazing at reading the needs of the people that are trying to bully us because we don't want them to hit us. Now, that served us well in the playground. That is not serving us very well in a professional environment. The chances that the VP of operations is going to throw a beatdown on you is probably zero. But we still have that in us. As developers, the developers are thinking about this all the time. They're reading what you need. They're not even realizing that they're reading it, and they are going to tell you, well, you're basically making them very nervous, and they're going to tell you exactly what you want to hear. And it isn't going to be true at all. Remember back to that Dilbert cartoon? Like, let's say that, you know, Dilbert's a nerd. He is. And let's say pointy-haired boss used to be like the captain of the football team, and he was a popular kid, and he's good at leadership. He's alpha male. And I don't know, what's Dilbert? Is beta male or something? What's the opposite of beta? I mean, the opposite of alpha in that particular... Omega? All right. So, Dilbert's the Omega man? I kind of feel like this is breaking down. I'm going to move on. So let's say that pointy hair boss is alpha. And let's say he's not saying, how's your project coming along? He's got a little spin on it, a little bit of English, and he's like, ah. So how's your project coming along? Subtext, better be awesome. What are you going to say? It's coming along fine. They're lying to you, and now you have no trust. Because you're going to eventually get busted as a lying developer. Your executives are eventually going to notice that, wow, they were lying. That's great. And they're not going to trust you. This is a major problem inside of software organizations generally. So little hint, a little tip, what's going on. Your bosses think you are absolute idiots. They don't trust you. And one of the reasons why is you always lie to them. And if you're not lying, then you always miss on stuff, and it's not good. Now, what you need to do is try to make Scrum Under Waterfall work a little better. You need to create an environment of trust. I know, easier said than done. But if you are a leader, and as I'm writing these slides, I was thinking more from what should a leader do in an organization if they're trying to make Scrum Under Waterfall work? And you need to work on trying to create trust. Try to create an environment where it's okay to be quote unquote wrong. And you're not really being wrong, you're just you figured something out and now it's not the same as what you thought before. And if you're a leader, another thing you have to think about is you need to make it okay for your teams to tell you that you are wrong. So this happens all the time, right? We're on the teams, we're the developers, or we're the business analysts, or whatever, and the executive people are asking for something that is redonkulous. Just like, wow, that is not in your best interest. But they're yelling at you, and you get nervous, and you're afraid you're going to get your milk money stolen and your trapper keeper thrown in the ditch. And yeah, I just dated myself, huh? 38 years old. You can pin it right down. What you need to do is you need to make it okay for them to tell you that you are wrong. So a quote from Leadership the Hard Way. It's a book by Dov Froman and Robert Howard. The goal of a leader should be to maximize resistance in the sense of encouraging disagreement and dissent. And he goes on a little bit more and says, if you aren't aware that your people in the organization disagree with you, then you are in trouble. So this is a requirement for you in software leadership, or you who are budding software leaders, is you got to get a handle on the fear in your organization. Get inside the heads of your developers, understand what their motivations are, understand what all the nerds are thinking on your team. They've been picked on. You have to figure out how to make it okay for them to be a little bit wrong, because if you don't, you're executing on wrong data and you are in trouble. One of the things that waterfall-centric organizations and waterfall mindset people tend to do is they tend to get into this trap right here. So a quote from Yes to the Mess. Too often in organizations, leaders think that if they get the three R's clear, rules, roles, and responsibilities, that innovation will logically follow. More often than not, the results are actually going to be 180 degrees in the opposite direction. Now, this is kind of like that idea of gripping tighter. The tighter you grip on your team, the more nervous they're going to be, and the more that they're probably actually not going to come up with awesome solutions. One of the reasons why is they don't want to be wrong. So they're going to be overly cautious. And in fact, they are terrified of being wrong. And one of the reasons is, as a software leader, your developers and your teams don't understand your motivations. Now, I'm sure that this has fallen out of your lips all the time. You're going to say, I need all this. I need this feature, and this feature by this date, or this company is in the toilet, and you guys are all fired. Right? Happens quite often. The problem is, you know it's bogus, but your team believes you. So one of the things you've got to do, well, back to that creating the environment of trust, So research shows that the biggest obstacle to creating the psychological safety that allows people to learn from mistakes is a hierarchy. You're probably distant from your team. You've got to get down with them, and you need to share the vision that you've got in your head with your team. Get into discussions. Even if you think you need feature A, B, C, and D by a particular date, you don't really. You have an idea of which one is more important than others, and you have thoughts on how you're supposed to do that. So even if you have a waterfall project plan that says, these are the things I want in this order, discuss what's between the lines with your team. It's going to create that feeling of trust, and your team is going to execute better. It's going to lessen that feeling of fear. Number four, I'm going to go a little faster through this one. Avoid earned value. And that earned value is that partial credit thing, 72% done on my task. Going to another quote by another famous project management expert, earned value is the path to the dark side. Earned value leads to technical debt. Technical debt leads to maintenance problems. Maintenance problems lead to suffering. Now, I was sort of reading between the lines, like I knew what Yoda really meant, and that's why I put all those things in the square brackets. But it's important to think about. It's not done unless it's 100% done. So if you don't already have a written definition of done in your teams, go get one on, what, Monday, whenever you're back. Get that written down. And then from that point forward, focus on writing done software and don't accept anything that is not fully compliant with that definition of done. It will do wonders for your ability to communicate. This will also do wonders for that culture of fear. Because now, like one of the problems that developers have is when we talk to our bosses, well, remember I said that our bosses think we're all idiots? One of the things they don't like is that we always say no. And because we're nerds, we clam up after that. We're like, no, don't hit me. It's true, right? So what you need to do is, like in improv comedy, there's the concept of yes and. You don't say no but. So what the flavor you have to get into as a developer is you have to get into no and. It's my own thing that's made up. So you're not just going to say no, you're going to say no, and here is why we think so. And usually why you're going to say no is you're going to say no, and the reason why is that it's not in your best interest. And now, if we come over to our definition of done, here are all these things that we need to do in order to make this happen, and that's why your voluntold estimate is wrong or whatever. You start having a conversation. So your definition of done will also help you out with your culture of fear problems. So focus on done software and your definition of done. And then the number one most, am I out of time?
Could we focus on the done?
I thought I had like five more minutes.
Actually, minus 10.
Minus 10?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought I had 75 minutes. I was pacing myself awesome against that. All right, I'm finished. All right, let me wrap up. I was wondering, I was like, why is Keith over here? This is like creeping me out, dude.
I'm trying to pop myself out.
I'm like, all right, he's like getting ready to high five me. Come on, Keith, give me a.
Yeah, nice.
Great job.
Awesome. All right, last thing, I will burn through this and we'll be out. Avoid keeping two sets of books, create a shared reality. And one of the tips for shared reality is Team Foundation Server plus Microsoft Project Server. So if you've got to be Waterfall, that's the way to go. So TFS and Visual Studio, one-stop shop for your development side. With Project Server and the sync, you can round-trip different things so that everyone can stay in their own tool and everybody is completely happy. Talk to me afterwards to go through these scenarios. Don't criticize me. I know I'm on stage and I'm out of time. The big win is that everyone stays in their own tools and that synchronization happens automatically. Moving forward. So those were the five tips. I'm out of time. So a few things to look at. Man, I totally, I was going to bring this in right on time. I mentioned Clausewitz a little bit before. I have moments of being very interested in what the military knows about leadership. There is a great overview of Clausewitz on a podcast, so In Our Time by BBC Radio 4. Their May 17, 2012 episode talks about this. It actually applies to software development rather a lot. Another one that you need to get into is thinking about the emotional overhead of scope negotiations. People are scared. You've got the culture of fear. Negotiating with Emotion is a recent article from Harvard Business Review. It's pretty awesome. She's talking about negotiating big deals, but negotiating scope inside of features and requirements is just as applicable. Thoughts on letting go? Check out Yes to the Mess, Leadership Lessons from Jazz. I'm a former jazz musician. And then on leadership style communication, and most importantly, failures, The Generals by Thomas Ricks. So, Scrum is an awkward place to be. Thank you very much, and we'll see you later.